everyone. Hi, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week I have a really interesting guest. It's not someone that we normally talk with in our area, but I think what Chris has to say in terms of digital marketing and how the different channels interact, we, you know, you and I have talked about the different types of behaviors and where people are at relative to in their mind as to their purchase intent. Well, Chris Daly is a digital marketing entrepreneur and speaker, and also a neuromarketer, so we'll want to pick his brain about that, who is really great at getting people to understand the impact of website, landing pages, testing, analytics, using psychology. He is a principal or founder of Disruptive Advertising out of Utah. I'll put all of his information on his page so you can contact him. But he's currently serving as VP of Site Testing and Optimization. Welcome, Chris, to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on, Mary Lou.
Very good. So where do we begin? I mean, there's just so much to cover here. Well, let me just give you some background about where we are in the scheme of things. We're typically targeting people that we want to talk to. So by definition, we should have some level of understanding, maybe not of their purchase intent, but definitely the sweet spot, because we've done our homework on the ideal account profiles. We kind of know the people because we're picking these people to start conversation with. But, you know, we don't have a lot more than that in some cases. So I would like you to help us understand the work that you do, how it could potentially fit into an outbound targeted approach, because you're all about attraction and inbound and getting people to come to you. So you're doing some really cool things that we could probably leverage off of. And then secondly, I'd like to understand what you're doing with analytics, because that is what Mary Lou Tyler personally loves to do. But I think some of my audience too gets a little excited about metrics and how to, what I call, visualize quantitative information, and even qualitative to that extent. So let me start by asking you, where do you see the connection between the type of work that you do and this outbound targeted approach that our audience is mostly involved in?
Sure. Yeah, and that's a great question. And I'll give a couple thoughts there. but anytime you are trying to sell somebody on anything, I mean, there's some level of marketing that's involved, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always pair sales and marketing together, because in my mind they're one and the same. And you know, you'll say, "Well, of course you think that way, Chris. You're a marketer." But it's anytime you are exposing someone to a new message and then trying to sell them, there's some level of marketing and salesmanship that's required. And so the first thing, like anytime we start working with clients on a marketing campaign, mm-hmm. We always start with some of the foundational basics. And some of those questions that we will often ask are, number one, who is your target demographic, or who are your customer profiles or personas, mm-hmm. right? And that's something that most companies, I think, have a general idea of. Great salespeople are usually able to kind of back into a great customer persona just because they're talking to so many people on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a good salesperson should be able to say, well, the average person that I sell or that I close has this and this and this and this trait or whatever. Right. Or is from this and this and this type of company, right? I mean, you can usually back into some sort of persona. And then based on those types of personas, we usually have a good idea. So I'll just give you like one of disruptive advertising's target personas. We were just having a sales and marketing meeting right before this call. So this is fresh in my mind. And so we were realizing, okay, hey, when we are working with clients that need advertising on Google or Facebook, the best people for us to be talking to are people that are already working with another agency that have seen a dip in sales or a dip in performance over the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. Right. So that is, on the one hand, it's very specific. And on another hand, it's pretty broad, right? I mean, just about any type of company could fit into that, from any location around the world. And so the best type of this is where a little bit of where some of the analytics will come in. Mm-hmm. But this is where it's really helpful to go back and take a look at in as much data that you can possibly get into. It's helpful to look at what are our conversion rates. So for this type of customer, if I can look at all of my customers, mm-hmm. Wherever we have them in some kind of a CRM or whatever, if I can look at all the customers that I have sold, what are the other metrics that I should layer on top of this? So all of the people that we've worked with that were working with an agency before us, that's probably a list of 500 clients. I'm just going to estimate. So we have a list of 500 clients we've worked with that have previously worked with an agency that were attracted to us in some way, shape, or form. What are some of the additional characteristics that we can layer on top of that? Is there some commonality in terms of location? Is there some commonality in terms of job title? Is there some commonality in terms of budgets or anything else? I mean, all the things that you would ask for if you were qualifying a sale. Mm-hmm. I want to try to figure out as much of that information before I actually engage with these people as possible, because the messaging that I'm going to give to a CEO is very different than the messaging that a sales director or marketing director or HR director or whatever is going to respond to.
Correct.
Right. And the types of value points and the type of value propositions or selling propositions or however, or the types of pain points that those people are going to have, it's all going to be different. So this is part of what good sales and marketing is learning how to personalize your pitch or personalize your messaging based on the person that you're talking to. And that's a lot of what I do. Mm-hmm. Again, on the website, and I view a website as just a microcosm of the entire sales process. A lot of what we do on a website is we try to figure out how much information do these people want, what order do they need to know this information in, and can I pull out some data? So, if I am pitching verbally 10 people, can I do something on 5 of those pitches and something on 5 of the other pitches? Can I do one thing different and find some kind of cause and effect in there? So if I tell my pricing at the beginning of the pitch versus the end of the pitch, what ordering do people prefer at certain levels? Like, that's a little bit of what we do, is trying to boil down and figure out, what do people need to do in order to make a decision? What information can we give them? What do we need to say? How do we need to say it? And how can we use data to prove some of these things so that we can be continually refining our pitch?
Mm-hmm. And we do some of that very similar analysis. What we do is we take the, first of all, why we matter, why change, why now, why us. So the value proposition you talked about, that we call them value themes, but getting an understanding by persona, by role, whether they're decision makers, direct influencers, or indirect influencers, depending on who we pick to talk to. Because remember, we're picking the people we want to talk to here. We've developed this matrix of, okay, am I having a strategic conversation with decision makers, or is it meaning visionary, or is it going to be something like business outcomes of how we can be more efficient, more effective, get rid of this problematic thing that's been stymieing us for so long that we can't get past it? What is that activity, that job, that challenge in that level that we can talk about from a business use case perspective? And then we also can talk about service and how we differentiate with our people. And then finally, products. So we put product at the end of, the least sexy thing to talk about, because we make the assumption now with the internet, especially if they are savvy about the kinds of work that we do, that they know a little bit about the why, and the how maybe is not too clear, but that's what we're going to be talking to them about, and also really reinforce why us over anybody else. So we do a little bit about of what you just talked about. The nice thing about what we do is that we can immediately test our hypotheses, and we can get a list and get a small little data set and try these conversations out and look at the metrics. So the metrics for us are gold, are so important. But like I heard you say, mm-hmm. you know, you're looking at all these different things and sort of layering on top and feathering in. How does one know what to feather in and what to layer on top in terms of the metrics? Is there a formula that, or a thing that you look at? Like in my book, we talk about firmographic, we talk about socio information, heuristic information. Do you do similar things in your world to prepare and get ready? And if so, are there like go-to metrics that you always look at that seem to outperform the old 80-20 rule?
Sure. Well, and that's you bring up some really great points. And one of the things that I love about what I do is we kind of take a combination of all data sources and then ultimately put them to the test. Like I know, you know, I'm sure that you talk a lot about A/B testing and in terms of your pitch. And so, you know, putting to the test what we are able to identify and learn from analytics. So I'll share in terms of data that we typically collect, I'll share a couple of things that is usually helpful. And then some interesting things that I have seen, because we actually, I'll start with a story. So we ran a we got together a group of clients, one of our customers' clients, and we basically did a survey, right? And we said, out of all of these different types of things, which one do you like the best? Which one would you be most likely to respond best to? Like, what type of messaging would you respond best to, et cetera? So we were able to extrapolate some information from that. And then we actually put it against the we put it up to the test and ran an A/B test. Granted, this is on a website. Right. And we presented both of these experiences. And then we compared the data of the test against the data of the survey. And one thing that was fascinating to me is we got the complete opposite result. So what people told us they wanted was the complete opposite of what they actually responded best to.
Behavior versus what they're telling you. Gee, it's like my children, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so it's very interesting. All of the data that we gather, all the information that we gather can be informative, and it can help open our eyes. But I think one of the most dangerous traps for any type of business person, sales or marketing, to fall into is to make assumptions based on data that's been gathered, right? Like if somebody tells me that they want something, I need to just automatically start giving that to people going forward. Because there was an interesting study that was done at, I believe, Harvard, and they studied what percentage of a purchase decision is conscious, like it takes place in the conscious mind. Right. And they found that 90% of a purchase decision is subconscious. Or in other words, only 10% of our purchase decision, we are conscious of the reasons why we're purchasing. You know, and if you think about, of course, there's probably some difference in the percentage for depending on the price or the scope or the number of people that are involved in the decision. But by and large, a lot of the decisions that people make are gut instincts. And so, you know, if you ask people what they want, or if you are trying to base your pitch, your marketing efforts, your sales efforts off of what people are saying they want or people are telling you, you're just getting the tip of the iceberg, the top 10%. So that's where the only way to get beneath the surface, the only way to figure out what do people really want to hear, you know, what should I actually include in my pitch? Because I could include every pain point that my potential audience might have. I could include every value proposition that my business has. But if there's only one pain point that they really care about and only one value proposition that they actually want to hear about, if I spend too much time talking their ear off, I'm going to lose the sale, even though I told them the thing that they said they wanted to hear. I told them too much. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a lot of what we do is picking apart some of these data points, some of these customer demographics and psychographics that companies piece together, and basically throwing these up against the wall and saying, let's put this to the test. Let's see if all these assumptions that we've made about these audiences are actually true.
Are actually valid. And you put your ego in your pocket and you test. I mean, that's really the beauty of all of this, is that what we think we know. And you brought up such a great point. I, in a prior life, I still am a market research analyst, and we do a lot of focus groups, right? And you hear things in a focus group that directly contradict what you see in a survey, which directly contradict what you end up seeing if you do some type of CRM or loyalty type of exit interview type thing. So it is very difficult to kind of know what is true and where truth lies. So the only reason that I bring that up is that testing is really where you start uncovering, and it may be 180 from what you thought, and be prepared for that and be okay with that.
Most importantly. And I think that the most important skill, or the most important behavior for any, whether you are, again, sales, marketing, whether you're an entrepreneur or an employee, whatever, the most important behavior for people to have is the willingness to challenge your own assumptions, the ability to be open-minded. And one of my favorite quotes is, I believe it's from Jim Rohn, where he said, your level of success in life will rarely exceed your level of personal development. And to me, personal development is being willing to constantly learn and change and adapt. And so all this kind of comes together for me, especially in any kind of sales capacity, as you were talking about, evolving your pitch over time. Right. Being willing to challenge your own assumptions and being willing to challenge what you've heard before, what you've done before, in order to continue learning and in order to continue adapting.
You know, this is really interesting, because you're definitely a kindred spirit for me, even though you are more marketing than probably sales. You probably favor that side of the house, which by definition, I think marketers, they're going to kill me for saying this, seem to be more analytic in really taking as many data points as possible to have it paint a picture. And it may not be the right roadmap, but it's a roadmap to get started on. And then with A/B split testing and all these other principles that we learned way back when from direct mail and prior to the internet, which is where I grew up, we tested everything. We tested subject lines. We tested headers. We tested the envelope, what was written on the envelope. Everything was tested, because we never really knew that ideal conversation, that ideal way of presenting something to prospects. And like you said, there's a variety of prospects that either are the decision maker themselves, are heavy influencers in the decision process, or are the type of people who let us in the door, the warm referrals, the indirect folks, all of which we have to tune our sales conversation and hone it so that we get them engaged, we get them interested, they're compelled to give us what we want, which is that meeting, that next step in the sales process. And I wish sales would borrow more from the operations side of marketing, the people who, like you, are just diving into the weeds and pulling out those data points, because there's just so much wasted effort on our side by people not willing to do that homework ahead of time, and also to learn from what's actually in execution to make those changes and to pivot if necessary. We tend to want to waste data and waste and fatigue our list to the point where we just throw up our hands and say, this just doesn't work for us. But that's not the case, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's another interesting study. There's some very cool technology nowadays that a lot of retail stores are using to try to determine the optimal store layout. And I mean, retail stores have been doing this for decades, where they will test different, Walmart will test different store layouts to figure out, like, what should we have by the entrance versus by the, versus by the cash register, and what order should people walk through the store in. And there's been some interesting research that's been added to their efforts in the last 10 years or so, in the form of eye tracking, where they will literally have customers walk into a store and they will put these glasses on them where they can track where their eyes are pointing and in what order. And it's very, very simple things. Some very simple things can really influence people's purchasing decisions. For example, Walmart has tested, does the color of our sale banners that we put over different sections in the store, does the color of that impact sales at all? What they found is that it did, because the color that that sale banner is, like, or the color that the price is in, is going to draw attention in either a positive or a negative way.
Right.
You can either you can have a blue sales banner with the price. You can have green, you can have red, you can have orange, all these different colors, and different colors are going to draw different amounts of attention to them. And so it's interesting to look at, some of these things and try to apply it to a sales mindset. What does that mean for sales? Because, obviously a retail store is a very different ball game than pitching somebody in person. And many of the same principles apply. What happens when I show them this particular presentation in this order? What happens when I talk to them and I address these specific questions or these specific points in this specific order versus this other order, right? I'm affecting the way that their brain is thinking and the order that they're thinking about things and the level of buy-in that I'm getting at different stages of the conversation. And some people are very naturally gifted at this and some people are horrible at this. A lot of people just will take one approach and try to refine it to death without even trying something different, and throwing everything up against the wall. And so I think it's very interesting to understanding what we need to say in what order and how, in order to really resonate with somebody else. Like, what is it going to take to really get this person to make a decision?
Right. And in, I keep coming back to, in our world, we have this concept called sequences and cadences, which give us multi-touch ways to reach our prospects. So order is very important. Order of the sales conversation, order of the touch itself. What kind of touch? Is it a phone call? Is it an email? Is it a social touch? Is it direct mail, sending out a postcard? You know, what is this order for the ultimate high conversion rate? It's so many people out there don't think that way when it comes to putting these sales conversation engines, these new ones that are out there, that the follow-up systems that allow us to have multiple conversations at scale. But we're not thinking about the order of the conversation and how things should resonate and what order do they resonate? And is it a strategic conversation maybe, or a business conversation, or when do I introduce the product? That kind of planning very seldom exists.
Yes. And the other piece of that is it's going to be different for just about every business. Right.
Yes.
I think one of the most dangerous things that I see with a lot of professionals is people who move from one company to another or one industry to another and bring all the best practices from the last company into the current company instead of testing everything all over again. Because, I see things that work for salespeople in one industry that completely fail in the same industry for a different company. And so you can't just take, best practices. There are some best practices that as a principle apply, but in the actual application of, for example, you talk about sequencing of messaging when you're reaching out, what's the best way to reach out and what's the frequency of that touch?
Yeah.
Those types of things are going to be different on a case-by-case basis. And so it's so critical to keep an open mind and to continue testing and challenging those ideas, especially when you are when you have a new message or a new audience or a new business that you are presenting.
And like you said earlier on, I don't know if we were recording at the time, but you said earlier on the channel that, we may not have multi-channels like we think about for attraction-based marketing and inbound, but we do have conversations where we're not cold. we're warm, or maybe mm-hmm. they came through and had a relationship with us, but it fell out for some reason. It wasn't the right time. So we put them into a nurture cycle. So we're the starting point is also something we have to think about is where they are relative to being in their head. You know, this thing you were talking about, the neuromarketing, what level of awareness are they at? Or do we think they're at? And do we need different sequences based on the levels of awareness, whether they're interested now, but they weren't 6 months ago? What was that pending event that caused them to jump back over into conversation with us? We can track all that now. So we have the intel so that when we do get them to bubble up, we route them to the right sequence. But a lot of that is not even really thought of or planned ahead of time as to what are these different roadmaps and routing of records that I need to consider. And because with you guys, what you do, you have to think about that because you're getting people from all these different channels in various states of awareness by definition.
Yes. In fact, I'll tell a funny story. So I spoke at a conference last year and we tried a new approach for sales. So, you know, we had a mid-funnel offer. So we had an ebook that I had created. Mm-hmm. And in my session at the conference, I said, hey, if you're, you know, interested in getting started with A-B testing, go to this URL. You can download this ebook, yada, yada. Right. And told the sales team about it. So people are going to come here. They're going to download this ebook. And there's a little box that people can check if they're interested in talking with our company. Right. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, because it was somewhat of a new process for us to try, our sales team was not taking into consideration the point of origin for this, for these leads. And so
exactly.
People were coming to my conference, downloading the ebook guide and checking that they were interested in talking with us. And then our sales qualifier is going to call them up and say, hey, and go into their bottom of the funnel, you know, bottom of the sales funnel type questions to get, start pitching.
Right.
And it totally didn't resonate at all. In fact, it rubbed people totally the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of complaints. And so we had to modify that process pretty quickly. But it really highlighted to me again, what you're talking about right now, which is if somebody is upper to mid sales funnel, or in other words, they're not entirely sure that they want what I have yet, or maybe they're sure that they want what I have. They're just not sure that I'm the company for them to go with.
Yeah.
If I just start talking to them, if I start hitting them with all of the stuff at the bottom of the funnel, they're not there yet. They're not ready for all of that yet.
No.
And so again, it's so important to, the other leads that we were generating, that's where they were at in the sales funnel. And we had either nurtured them to that point or we had marketed to them in that point. And so anyways, I think it's just so incredibly powerful to be able to adapt your sales process and your pitch to the level of you know, where these prospects are at.
Right. And we have the luxury with multi-touch to sequence these conversations in different orders to test them. But also, like you said before, we're not bombarding them with 10 pain points in one message. Well, pick one. Right. Pick one, make it short and sweet, give them the punchline. It's like, you know, episodic television. We're going to give them the punchline. We're going to solve their problem. Then we're going to introduce another problem and say, wait till you hear what we're going to tell you about that one. And it's really all about that engagement, that dating, that keeping people interested to want to get that next email or see what else that we can help them with and transform their day in these little tidbits. And I think we're so focused sometimes on just vomiting on them with everything that we can do that we forget, oh, wait, they're not even, you know, they're an A, we're a Z. We need to kind of back it up and get to A with them and then take their hand and walk them through. It may take a little bit longer, but because we can mechanize these conversations now, we can put a lot more in and feed a lot more in at the top. And the people who are ready and scoring themselves, self-directed scoring, will want to talk to us if we organize our sales conversations in the proper manner.
Right.
So, Chris, how do people learn more about you and your company? And what's the next step if someone's listening to this saying, okay, I get it. He's speaking the language that I need to learn more about. What do we do?
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, the first thing, again, you know, my area of expertise being marketing, you know, we do all kinds of different types of marketing. You know, my area of expertise being website, conversion rate optimization type focus. Right. You know, we have a variety of different resources that we have put together. You know, I mentioned just a minute ago, you know, like a starter ebook, put together for the conference last year. And we also have just a variety of blog posts on our website that are focused again on marketing, but marketing principles, conversion principles, and analytics principles. And so people can find those just at disruptiveadvertising.com/blog.
Okay.
And we've got a phenomenal content team that works together with me and some of the other experts here at Disruptive to create some of the best content pieces. And so I would love for people to go check out the blog, check out some of the blog posts. And you know, I'm on LinkedIn, on Twitter. If people want to reach out to me directly, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And that's at Chris Daly, DAYLEY.
Okay, and I'll make sure all your contact information is on your page that we put together for the podcast. One thing I want to note for everybody who's listening to this, you can think of your sequences, which are those multi-touches over a period of time, as mini funnels. I mean, there really are acting like funnels. And a funnel is usually a marketing term of how to get people into the top, and then get them through the middle and towards the bottom of the funnel. Each of our sequences should be treated that way, as mini funnels that we do. And the thought that goes into how those funnels operate and the velocity at which they operate and the conversion rate at which they operate is how we should be running our outbound, our outreach, the people that we want to contact. That's how I teach my folks, is by utilizing the concept of marketing and the funnel, and also the preparation that goes into exactly what the conversation should look like, what order, as Chris was saying, they should be in, and then testing along the way to see the conversion rates of each of the conversation pieces, the subject line, the click-throughs, the actual body of the message. That's all being tested as we move them through this sequence or our mini funnels in order to get them for us to that first meeting. That's where we're trying to go. So what Chris does and the work that he does can be directly applied to the work that we do. And the smarter sales executive and professional will take this information and apply it right away, because you'll start to see that your list fatigue will go down, that your conversion rates will go up, and you'll be maximizing your return on effort, which is what we're trying to do here. Chris,
Absolutely. Thank
you so much for your time today. Very much enjoyed you coming on the podcast, and I hope and wish you much success as you work through this. And hopefully some of our guys will come over there and pick your brain and start acting, you know, interacting with you on the work that you do.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.